Hey, everybody, you're listening to the Work For It podcast on the Makery Network. I'm Brian House.
And I'm Ben Butler. And together we represent the two most important components of the maker world.
I work the steel.
And I work the wood.
The show's primary focus is business in the workshop. And then we reach out to you on social media with a question every week.
We read your answers and then discuss them on the show.
Follow our show on any major podcast platform and on Instagram at workforit.podcast. Or you can support us for as little as $1 a month on patreon.com/workforit. Let's get on with the show. What I have always done, which is hit the record button and not ask either of you. That's right. I said either of you, whether you're ready or not. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the Work For It podcast. We are thinking about changing the name of the podcast to the Triple B Menage a Trois because we have three B's. We've got Brian with an I, the correct spelling. And Brian with a Y now. Brian
Kyle. Why, Brian?
Brian Y.
And we Brian also
Y.
have Benjamin Butler. Woo. Coming live at 5. That's right. We are right here on the Makery Network, and we are rocking your eardrums. We are full of good energy.
Yeah.
Because it is the dog days of summer. How you boys doing?
It's Work For It Wednesday, baby.
Work For It Wednesday, even though this comes out on Thursday, but you know, it is Wednesday when we record.
We've got five B's by my count. I've got three in my name alone.
That is true. It's true.
But I'm doing good. Man. How are you, Mr. Brian Cohn?
I'm doing great. So, I mean, haven't been getting a whole lot of work in the shop done just because, like Brian House said, it is crazy hot. It's the dog days of summer, practically.
Yeah.
So I've been getting up early, trying to get in a couple hours, and then once it hits 80 degrees, 85 degrees, that's all I can do, and I have to go inside. So some of
our audience may not know who you are, Brian, so yeah, sure. I would like you to give us a quick synopsis about yourself, because I think some of the audience has heard you and heard us mention you, and you've come live with us a couple of times, but I want to kind of real quick give a primer as to the situation we're in. We're switching gears with the Work For It podcast because the show has grown significantly. We have a large viewer or listenership, I should say, and we now have enlisted Brian to kind of come in and produce the show. As perfect as I am, I'm really not able to do all of the things, you know, like, you know, I don't have eight arms, but Brian has joined the team to, you know, basically monitor the comments section while we do live streams and then also, you know, create other content and sort of steer the conversation a little bit. So, but I wanted you, Brian, to just kind of give us a real quick, you know, your elevator pitch of who you are and why you wanted to come on the Work For It podcast crew.
Yeah, guys. So I'm Brian Cohn, B Cohn Knives. Go ahead and check out my Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube pages.
He's plugging shit already, Ben. Look at him. He's plugging shit already.
Hang out for
the
game.
You gotta play that game.
I love it. All right, go on, Brian. I promise I won't interrupt you again.
I am just a small knife maker. I literally have, my shop is only 8 foot by 16 foot, so I've got a really small condensed space. And I've only been at it for a couple of years, so I'm just a newcomer to the, you know, knife making community, and I'm loving the, you know, outpour of greatness that you guys always give and how, you know, you guys always try to help as much as you possibly can. But anyway, so with this, I am joining this, you know, podcast just to basically give a helping hand, try to make it so that, you know, this conversation can be nice and smooth and, you know, just pepper in nice little, you know, tidbits of conversation where I can and, you know, try to let you guys have a great conversation. So here I am and I'm at your service, my guys.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. The one of the things I think we were struggling with the live streams was not having that extra set of hands. Ben and I volleying the conversation back and forth. It was really tough. So now we've got Brian Cohn And he's able to, you know, kind of just step in and be our eyes and ears while we're, you know, bullshitting. And then also he's going to be integrating his concepts into the Work For It podcast. The other little kind of little thing I thought about with employing Brian was he is the epitome of what we all were when we first started.
No,
he's got high work ethic, real good work ethic. He's got a lot of drive. He's getting started. He's literally me 15 years ago, you know, clamoring, working, climbing the ladder, trying to do things. And now we're kind of spanned all across. If you think about it, like I'm more the advanced guy. I've got like the, you know, I'm doing things full time. I've been an entrepreneur for 15 years. We have Ben who's doing the side hustle gig. He's, you know, content creator. He's creating things on the at night and working hard. And then we've got Brian, who's also the side hustle guy that wants to turn it into a full time gig. And he's just getting started. So we now have this beautiful sort of mix, a blend of like, the, you know, all different layers of makers who are, you know, pushing towards the same goal, which is to work hard and work for yourself. So I love that. I love that you're with us, Brian.
Really cool.
You're like, you're when I said that on the podcast last week about employing a third person, bringing someone on, I got like 20 DMs and texts and everything. And I'm sorry if I haven't responded to everyone. I got so many people who wanted to jump in. And,
so you're saying I'm replaceable.
Already picked Brian. Yeah, well, I'm this is what
everybody's
I do.
I leave
a layer of possibility of always being replaced with anybody that that I employ. I always just tell them, like, look, there's 100 people that want your job. Always remember that. Every morning when you wake up and you come to work for me, remember, somebody else will take your job. No, I don't like the fear-based stuff. I'm kidding. When I had mentioned all that stuff, by the way, I had always thought, like, I had you in my mind, Brian. So it wasn't like, I just didn't know if your schedule was going to work out or whatever. So that was the other thing why I mentioned it.
Well, it's great to be here, man. I really
appreciate
it.
It's good to have you. And that's, you're right, Brian, that like that scheduling piece. Folks that don't podcast probably don't quite realize, but I ran a podcast before this a couple of years ago and have talked to quite a few folks as well about who are trying to put together podcasts, and scheduling murders more podcasts, I think, than any other reason. Number one, folks don't quite comprehend what it means to produce a podcast when they jump into it. And then number two, it's like, holy shit, we got to do this every week. Like every week? Like, yeah.
It's hard to carve out 2 hours, isn't it?
I mean, it really is.
It's really tough. Oh. Yeah, it's tough because we do a pre-show and an after-show and we're always BSing and stuff.
Yeah.
And sometimes I've got a heart out. Sometimes you've got a heart out.
Mm-hmm.
And then now we're adding a third layer by having a third person. So it becomes kind of
a commitment.
Every Wednesday at 3:00. And that's, we've been, you know, trying to stick to that because it makes it easy for you to plan your week.
And we moved around, but, you know, we landed back to the original. I think this time slot, I think, was set way back when I first was on the show the first time for an interview.
Yep.
So we've been rolling with it.
And I really feel like with everything online now, consistency is so key. If people know, like, for instance, with this, we know Wednesday at 3, you've got to have your schedule cleared. Well, when you're posting things, if you post things at the same time every week or every other week or whatever your frequency is, people then realize that that's the time it's going to be there, so they start expecting it.
So do computers, and people don't think about that, right? So does the algorithm that everybody's trying to game, right? And when I first started my Instagram feed, I attribute that consistency almost 100%. To my growth rate early on. I would literally wait until 12:00 noon on the nose. I mean, to the second when it's, you know, the stroke of noon, I would hit post on my posts. And I did that for a year straight, you know, every day at noon, boom.
And do you think that timing of like releasing something, is that as important now? Or is it just like you have to do it once a day or something?
I think it is. And here's part of the reason why. Number one, you want to hit Instagram at the time when people are going to be looking at their phones, right? Because everybody's feed is always sort of evolving, right? And so if you post something at, say, 4 o'clock in the morning, but Joe Bag of Donuts doesn't pick up his iPhone and go to Instagram until 9 o'clock at night, he may not ever see your post, right? It gets buried in the feed by the time Joe gets to, you know, checking out Instagram. And so what I would always try to do, noon was pretty good. 10 a.m. is what I eventually settled on in the mountain time zone. And the reason I went 10 a.m. is I was hitting noon on the East Coast, right? So New York City, all the big cities in the East would be on lunch break or just going to lunch break. You move back a time zone to Central Time, you're at 11. Here in Mountain Time, you're at about 10 o'clock, a mid-morning break for people, right? And then if you look on the West Coast, they're maybe just getting up, just getting going, you know, 9 a.m. And then for folks in Alaska, it's 8 a.m., but I don't really see a boost there.
Eastern Standard. That's kind of what where you're thinking is kind of the sweet spot. Now, if you had to pick a secondary time frame, would you say it's more like the 4 to 5 o'clock Eastern time, like where people are just getting off of work? Or
with my feed, I haven't seen. I have not had much luck past about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So okay. if I have my choice, it would either be like 7 to 7:30 a.m. Eastern time or noon Eastern time. And in fact, 3 years ago,
7:30 in the morning.
Yeah, because people are getting Eastern. Up, right?
Okay, and they're looking at their phones in bed typically. That's okay. Yeah. I see where you're going with this.
They roll the wife over and then look at the phone. Get off of me. I got to look at Instagram.
Benjamin Butler usually posts something right about this time.
I know he's going to post.
He's going to post one of those, high-speed videos of him making one of them table saw jigs. It's going to be awesome.
In fact, 3 years ago, if I didn't have a post up by 1 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern time, I just would not post that day.
So every day?
Wow. Yeah.
Are you saying every day?
Every day. Yep.
Jeez. All right.
Every day. And man, and what sucks about Instagram, right? Like YouTube, you can schedule posts, right? You can schedule a video to go live. And
right.
Twitter, you can schedule. Most other apps, you can schedule. And there are some tools out there that will allow you to schedule an IG
Hootsuite.
Post. Hootsuite,
like
yeah.
We'll let you.
Yep. But I've never used those all that much. I tried Hootsuite for a little bit, but I don't know.
I'm not a big fan of Hootsuite. I didn't like all they put like their watermark on everything,
right.
and I just, it annoyed me, and I just thought it's got to be a better way. So I just do everything by hand.
Yeah.
So
me too.
I mean, I do it as it strikes me, but I think now I'm going to think more about the strategy, and let me tell you why is because yesterday I went social media crazy. I don't know if you saw, but I put up a dance video that I did on TikTok because I have lost all dignity, and I realized that there's no way that I'm going to ever trend on TikTok. Let me step back a bit. Because here's the reason why I started looking at TikTok harder. I went to Blade Show last week. Let's just get this out of the way. If you've noticed a difference in my demeanor, that I seem a little bit more energized, 100% related to my weekend at Blade.
Man, it looked like you had such a
good
time.
And there's so many great stories. Oh, my God, dude. And the whole time I'm there, I keep thinking, like, I want to do more social media while I'm here or whatever. I was so overwhelmed. And not only that, I was in deep conversation almost the entire 3 days I was there.
Oh, nice.
You know, I'm connecting with all of these. I couldn't go 10 feet without somebody grabbing me going, Brian House, holy shit. And never in my life have I been recognized so many times. And then, you know, I felt my head getting swollen. You know, I was like dragging it out the door basically on the way out because I had so many people come up and tell me that the work that we are doing, not only on this podcast, but on YouTube And it was crazy because I would walk up to tables and I, you know, I don't know the person, you know, selling the knives, and I'm looking through their knives, and then I'll just hear, "I love your YouTube videos." You know, and I'd be like, "Whoa, you watch my YouTube?" And they're like, "Yeah." And like, you know, and then it's this long conversation and we're talking business. We're talking knives and steel and handle material. Long story short, I had an awesome time. So I feel fantastic about it. The one thing I didn't do, though, was post a ton on social media. And I felt like I wanted to, but there just simply was no time. So like next year, it's almost like I have to bring somebody with me. Like maybe Dexter wants to do it or something, and we'll kind of
That sounds like something that I should be doing. I'm trying to help with this podcast. Maybe I need to help with your social media at Blade Show too.
Exactly. While I'm at Blade Show, I'm getting text messages from Jeff Vader going, "Hey, call into Knife Talk. Call
I heard you Talk. on the show." Yeah.
So I'm standing like waiting to talk to Jason Knight, and I'm like, "Oh man, this would be perfect." Unfortunately, the timing didn't work out where I could get Jason on Knife Talk, but So I, you know, what happens is like there, it's just basically a big room filled with booths and tables, and you know, guys like Jason Knight, Neil Kamamura. All the guys, all the judges from Forged and Fire, except for Doug. Doug wasn't there. They're just wandering around. I mean, they're just literally just out there.
Do they have any like classes or anything?
Yes.
Or
it's not... Yes. Okay. Yes. There's so definitely classes. They're like $25 a pop. I only took one because I just wanted to spend more time, you know, just out and about. I also went and listened to a really great conversation, a really great presentation by Ernest Emerson, who of Emerson Knives. And I'll tell that story another time. There's so much to talk about, by the way, with Blade.
Yeah.
And I don't want to make this Blade 101 or whatever, but I had a great time.
In sort of the broad maker space and more, I guess, woodworking than anything, but there are a few folks who have sort of made a name for themselves going to these trade shows and sort of covering them in a way. A guy, Ethan Abramson comes to mind. He's the Build with Ethan on IG. And he's kind of a quirky guy. But he traditionally has gone to, like, if Milwaukee has, like, Milwaukee Tool has a big event every year where they launch new tools, right? And so they'll specifically invite social media folks, just guys like us, will get invites, and Milwaukee will fly them out to their facility, right? And they'll do all these tool demos and everything else. And the idea is that these people will promote what's going on at that event, you know, and whether it's a conference like World of Concrete or I don't remember some of the others, but these guys will just go on their own dime. Some of them go, you know, paid for by a specific tool company or something like that. But their goal is basically to cover the show, you know, and they'll walk up and, "Hey, what you got here?" And, you know, oftentimes they'll have an assistant who's like the camera dude, which seems really funny when the camera dude's operating an iPhone, you know?
Was a lot of that at Blade where there was just teams of people wandering around doing interviews and creating content for, I'm not sure what, you know, if they're,
who knows?
YouTube or whatever. But I mean, it was just overwhelming the entire time. And then, so getting back to what I was saying about, you know, here's basically what you were saying was, is I, you know, I ran into Chad over a Mancrafting.
That's so awesome.
So this place
he's
is freaking
everywhere.
Huge.
He
is everywhere. So there's 10,000 people in this Cobb Galleria. I come out of the bathroom and I'm walking and I see the Mancrafting shirt. Chad's wearing his own shirt. I'm wearing my own shirt. I've got the housemaid shirt.
I was just crafting some men in that other room there.
I walk up behind Chad. Now, Chad and I have never met, like personally met, but we talk all the time on Instant or on DMs. So I walk up behind him. I go, hey, look, it's Chad from Mancrafting. He like immediately turns around and he's like, holy shit, oh my God. Like, you know, we ended up spending the entire morning together because Chad Chad followed me into the talk with Ernest Emerson. So we listened to him do his thing and then we just BS'd and we were just crossing paths the whole time. But he what was funny like about it is he had a freaking media tag on.
Oh. Right?
There you go. So
you got a press pass?
Yeah, he had a press pass. So I look at him and I go, well, how'd you get that? He goes, I'm social media. What are you talking about? Of course I get a press pass. He's like, why don't you have one? I'm like, I guess I'm not smart enough to get one. I don't know. I didn't even know I would be.
Did it get perks?
Yeah, I don't know if there's perks. We didn't really talk about that, but I assume because he had, like, I think he had VIP access. Like he could get into anywhere basically in the entire show. So
cheaper tickets?
Yeah, and he's doing social media the whole time we're there. Yeah. He tells me about TikTok. He's like, dude, you got to get on TikTok.
He's like slaying it on TikTok.
Slaying it on TikTok. Like his last TikTok has like 300,000 views.
Yes.
Like crazy, crazy stuff.
He
like he's
is
crushing
it.
It.
I heard that.
He told Sarah this. He's like telling Sarah, like, hey, you got to get Brian on TikTok. He'll kill it. So then I'm like, all right. So now he's going to be my TikTok consultant because I can't figure it out. So yesterday I decided, like, I'm going freaking nuts with this social media stuff. And I'm going to produce, like, a TikTok that's going to go viral. And I do this, like, triple man dance thing and Big Brian and the twins. I'm doing this whole thing. You would not believe, of course, TikTok, it didn't do very well. I don't know, a couple hundred views on TikTok, but I posted it everywhere else. And of course, everywhere else I posted it, now I cannot get away from that thing. People are FaceTiming me going, stop it, don't do that anymore, blah, blah, blah. Like, just telling me, like, you're a moron. Meanwhile, I know they all think it's funny, and they all, so basically what I did was I pulled a, you know, any media is good media situation.
Yep.
And I'm planning
That's
on doing
the
more of
essence
that.
Of TikTok, I think.
Right? I think you're
if
right.
I can jump in here for a minute.
Absolutely.
So I've been trying to do a little bit more TikTok. So I did a couple videos in a row because it seems like TikTok, whenever a knife-shaped object shows up on screen, it gets completely suppressed.
Interesting.
So I did like three videos trying to do like a test where one, you know, I don't say the word knife at all. I actually call it like a sharp thing or whatever. And I like try to, you know, wink my way through, you know, obviously I'm talking about knives. The next one, I still say sharp thing, but then show a knife blank that I'm working on. And the third one, I say the word knife, but nothing else. Like I was actually working on a cutting board and I say, you know, the word knife at the end. Just to see, you know, if any of them get suppressed. And what's hilarious, it backfired on me because the one that I actually showed the knife, like the knife blank, the knife-shaped object, I posted it a couple hours ago and it's up over 5,000 views, which everything else has maybe gotten a couple hundred views. So it's completely backfired on me.
So it goes
I don't know
more
what
the
heck the happened
voice.
With the algorithm, but...
Well, I wonder, I mean, image recognition is a bit more difficult to do than voice recognition, right? So maybe that's why, right? Maybe it's harder to say write an algorithm that can find a picture of a knife than it is to hear the word knife.
But what's crazy though is that I've posted quite a few videos where I just show off a knife and I don't say anything at all. It's just music in the background. And when I put the knife on screen, it just completely gets taken down or it gets no views.
Huh.
Interesting.
That is
really kind of squirrely.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I will say I'm not smart enough to understand any of it at all. And in fact, I feel totally out of my element when I'm working with TikTok because it definitely feels like it's designed for young people and it makes me feel super old. However, I had a hell of a fun time making that video of me dancing around on screen.
Yeah,
the video before it, though, was just the video that I had posted everywhere else with not with TikTok in mind, which was my packing video of me packing steel.
Yep.
And that got like 1,000 views in the first 5 minutes. Like, and it did really well on Instagram as well. So like, I don't know, you know, maybe
TikTok,
there's just more to it than I know, but
TikTok seems to me, to be, and it's a little bit more inflated, but that's kind of the way Instagram was three plus years ago, you know, where, Things got a lot of views. You grew quickly. There was definitely a game-based nature to it. You know, you could game the system by trying to predict the algorithm, you know, with things like we're talking about now where, hey, it's blocking knife-shaped objects, or hey, it's blocking the word knife, or whatever it is. Instagram was that way early on when not early in Instagram's lifespan, but my usage of it early, three plus years ago. I have noticed, and I'm curious what you guys think about this, but I feel like I have noticed recently, past 2 to 3 weeks, a definitive shift in Instagram to where my stuff is getting more views. I'm picking up some more followers, and it seems to have gotten out of the ditch, so to speak, you know, whereas a month ago, it was just a fucking grind and nothing was getting play on my feed. But now I'm starting to get some views, and that's even with not being consistent.
I think you're right. And I also think that if you mix in some reels, because the reels are doing... I posted a couple of reels and they blew the content away on the feed a lot. Like I posted the packing video and it got 1500 views in like 1 minute, like the first minute it was up. So that was like huge. And then it just slowed off, tapered off. But then here's what else I've seen. And this could be completely unrelatable, but YouTube has been the same way. I think from a social standpoint, from a socioeconomic standpoint, I think the last month and a half or 2 months has been people not looking at screens so much. I think they're getting outside. I think COVID is kind of like summer is opening up, you know, up north and people are traveling. And with the amount of freaking people I saw at Blade, nobody was on their phones, man. I mean, it was great because people were wandering around. And talking to each other. I think that they missed that. You know, they had no social interaction. And you're shaking hands. Yeah. And, you know, I'm fully vaccinated now. So I didn't wear a mask anywhere. I wasn't required to wear a mask. The entire room was mask free, other than a handful of people I saw, you know, that were wearing masks. And I assumed that maybe they were wearing masks because maybe they had been sick at one time or recently. Yeah. And they just didn't want to get anyone else sick. But for the most part, I shook hands with everybody. We all went around and just pretended like COVID didn't exist. Yeah. And I mean, obviously, I don't know if I'm going to get sick or not, but I haven't yet. But yeah, I think that's part of the issue here is that people, I think globally, people are just going, I got to get away from my electronics. However, this month, sales are up. Social media is up. Yeah. I did the Gyoto challenge with all those guys on YouTube. So I've never had a knife making video do as well as it did.
I was just going to tell you earlier, that was a phenomenal video. I really enjoyed that. Just seeing your whole process and
stroke my balls some
the
more.
The different
man.
Tools.
Keep going. Keep going.
It really, honestly, I really enjoyed it. It reminded me of some of your earlier stuff to an extent where it was just. You do such a good job of explaining things and simplifying things, and that process you have is a highly complex process. But, you know, I'm sure I still only understand about a tenth of it, but I've got the gist of it, and that was just really cool.
Thank you.
Put it in perspective, honestly, like to be honest, it was kind of cool to see that process that you undertake to make a knife, because a lot of the discussions we have here on the show, it's like, oh, okay, perfect. Yeah. That's how it works. Oh,
but
cool.
It's a visual. Yeah, because we have been talking about it for a long time on the show. And this is the first challenge that these guys have put together. And we were all kind of not sure if it was going to, you know, do anything. We didn't know. So when I was at Blade, I ran into one of the organizers. His name is Dennis Tyrell. He's going to come on the show. Actually, the Art of Craftsmanship got the exclusive. So if you listen to the Art of Craftsmanship, they're going to get the exclusive on the winner of the Gyoto Challenge. But if you don't listen to that, you can listen to us and we can talk about it. But there's going to be like an announcement of who's winning or who won. But and believe it or not, I'm not going to disclose much. but I am not in last place. Let's just say that. I'm actually, you know, not losing. I'm not winning, but I'm not losing completely. But not to say that the people that are losing are, it has anything to do with it. But it's just, it was awesome. The community that came out of that, for me, I got a ton of subscribers from it. Blackbeard Projects subscribed to my channel, which, by the way, gave me an enormous YouTube boner. I was just like, have been watching this guy on YouTube forever and appreciating his work forever. And then I see the little notification come up, Blackbeard Projects has subscribed to your channel. And I was like, it's like, dude, I'm not kidding. It was like meeting Elvis. You know what I mean? It was like the coolest thing ever. So, and to be in the same like chat room space with him and like being able to bounce ideas and stuff off of him, it was just like, dude, it put me in a space where my heroes are other makers. You know, I'm not like a big, like if I ran into like Ryan Gosling or something, I'd just be like, I don't know. You know, like I don't really care.
Right.
You know, Bruce Willis, John Travolta, those are, you know, those guys up. I'm up there. I'd probably, you know, melt a little bit when I'm around those dudes. But like there's only a handful of people. But you put me in a room like we have Blade where I'm meeting like, you know, all the guys from Forge and Fire and Jason Knight and Neil Kamimura. These are the people that inspire me, which means way more to me than somebody who can act, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so. No doubt. Yeah, there were some great, great videos in the mix there, you know, for all the folks on the on that knife challenge. I've watched them all and just really quality stuff all around. Just really neat. And I've wondered, and I'll bring it up. We've talked a little bit around maybe hosting a challenge. I know maybe it was in passing at one point, but I think it'd be kind of a fun thing to do, you know, like a community-based challenge where I think Knife Talk did they did a knife build challenge at one point, right?
I was a part of that. That's actually how I got how I got plugged in with Craig.
That's right. And Art of Craftsmanship folks, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's how this works. Like you get a bunch of people in on a challenge. That was a major broad challenge, by the way.
Yeah.
So that was like one of those challenges that didn't really have like a contestant type thing.
Right.
It was like you could just join along and like hashtag it.
Like a build along.
Think about this from a perspective. Somebody picks this up. They say, I'm going to do the work for it, whatever challenge that we decide to do or build along project. Mm-hmm. It connects people who are like-minded, you know, that want to do the same kind of thing. And that's how I got plugged in. That's the reason why I'm sitting right here at doing this podcast. I wouldn't be doing this otherwise.
Well, the Modern Maker podcast does a challenge. And it's sort of a community-based build-along type thing. But they also, and it's really broad, right? Like they picked like one sheet of plywood build or something like that. But they also have, they pick a winner and they work with sponsors. I think they work with Rockler or something to get a pretty good sized prize donated. I think we could pull something like that off maybe and host a challenge. And, I don't know. I'd hate to be a judge though. You know, that's one thing.
Well, you remove that from yourself. So you just do like what we did with the Giotto challenge is you create a polling thing. And so let the audience decide.
There we go.
That
so
it
we
removes
do that.
Us from any of that judging and stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, so here's my question. Because we have this trifecta of, you know, woodworking and metalworking and now knife making, you know, how do we make it so that all three of those bases are covered?
That's what I was wondering too.
Question.
Is that how do you could, well, what about this? You could make it like something for the kitchen, or something for camping.
Oh, I like this.
Yeah,
you pick like an activity or a space in which an activity takes place. Because I like that. I like that concept of like camping.
Yeah.
And I like, oh, dude, that's like perfect because.
That'd be cool.
You know, yeah, like you could, even if
camping gadget.
Yeah, you could say like, okay, you got to create something out of wood and metal that is utilized in the kitchen or utilized for camping. I love that concept because it's such a broad thing. And then everybody posts their pictures of it, and then they get a kind of a cool new group of people working. We'll work this off the air. We'll come up with something. I think we're on to something. Yeah, you are on the sponsorship train because I'm terrible at that. Speaking of sponsors, by the way, the gloves that were shipped to us.
Yes. Good call.
Firm grip. So let me just tell you what I've been up to this week. So last week, right before I left for Blade, I offloaded 100 grinder kits off of tube steel grinder kits off of a semi that came from my steel distributor. And I could not have done that without my Firm Grip gloves that was sent to us by Firm Grip.
They're sweet, aren't they?
They're very cool. Here's the downside to wearing these, and this is more of a funny thing than anything, is that the handle, the hand palm portion of it is black leather, which I really like. But you can't tell if you've got something really black on your hands, right? So I'm sweating and I'm wiping my face.
Oh, yep.
Okay. Now, if you can imagine, do you remember the wrestler, the Ultimate Warrior?
Remember
when he wore and he had the stripes down his face?
100%.
I look like that, but with just black, running down the sides of my face afterwards and stuff. And here's a
funny one for you. So my Nana. So we spent a lot of time at my Nana's house, my grandma's house, growing up, because we lived in the woods and went to school in town. Everything happened in town about 30 to 40 minutes.
Did you hear banjos on the regular?
Oh, totally. You know, we lived at the end of the dirt
road.
Run,
Ben, run! Squeal like a pig, man!
Squeal like
a pig!
A fucking pig! I'll spare you my pig squeal, but... but
Ben's
Nana...
lost in the hills of Pennsylvania.
Nana
and all we heard were
banjos. She was hardcore into wrestling for a number of years when I was a little kid.
Wait, your grandma?
Oh, she knew them all. Hell yeah, she was totally into it.
Like before it was the WWE. We're talking
WWF
years.
Yeah. WWF, Hulk Hogan and the like. Yeah, the Rowdy Piper. And so I was probably...
The golden years of wrestling.
Yeah, I was probably, I don't know, 10, somewhere between 10 to 14 years old. She eventually sort of grew out of the phase, but, you know, early on, I mean, and thinking back on it, I don't know why, but this topic has come up three times in the past month where Nana liked wrestling, but thinking back on it, of course she would, right? It's nothing but a fucking soap opera, you know?
You're right. It was all scripted. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
And Nana was never the type to hang out with the girls, right? She was hang out at the bar with the guys.
Gotcha.
She was just one of the guys kind of gal, you know? And I can remember as a kid watching it with her. And of course, you know, she's your Nana. So she says things like, you really think this is real? You think he really hit him there?
You think they really break their backs when they do the backbreaker?
Right. I don't know, Nana. Real? Could be.
Don't ruin it for Nana. Don't ruin it for Nana.
Oh, it's funny. Good memories. Gosh.
So switching gears a little bit, I think we ought to do the first and foremost workshop update. All three of us are going to chime in on this, what we've got going on in our workshops this week. And I want to volley this over to Brian. Brian, what do you got going on in your workshop this week?
So this weekend, I had a wedding, so I wasn't in the workshop hardly at all. So I just started a new batch of knives. It started out with 5. It's now 4.
Uh-oh.
So... I had talked to you, Brian, a little bit about doing a super thin chef knife, just like you had. Well, when I heat treated it, it decided to fold in like a taco. So I had to throw that one out. But okay, with this,
so wait, go back. So when you heat treated, because you got the what was the thickness of the stock that you bought?
So it was like 0.03, which if my math is right, that's 1/32 thin. So it's
and you're heat treating in a kiln or in a forge. A kiln. Yeah, that's the reason. Yeah, okay.
I had zero chance of success on that, but
this
why not try?
Experiment. Yep. Sharing your failures. Fun. That's cool.
Sure, of course. So I ended up having to throw that one out earlier today, but so because I'm moving over to an apartment about an hour away, I started making a batch of knives or a set of knives for my kitchen. So it was going to be that chef knife, a flay knife, and a paring knife. Well, now that chef knife is out, so I'm going to have to remake that. And then I've got a couple other knives that I'm making for a couple customers. And I just finished the heat treating. I ground in the bevels this morning. So I woke up super early this morning, got out to the shop so that, you know, I could kind of beat the heat a little bit. So I put in about 6 hours before noon and ground in and basically made them nice and pretty and shiny. And then now they're sitting in ferric chloride, so they're etching down.
Nice. And tell me about the steel. Are you? Oh, by the way, I ran into your friends over at Alabama Damascus.
Oh, yeah. Very nice. Yeah,
they were at Blade. But what kind of steel were you using for this?
So this one, I had two different Alabama Damascus. So, you know, really high-end, nice Damascus, great prices. They're just great people. And then I had two mono steel. At one was 80 CRV2, and the other one was 1075, I believe.
Which one was the .03 at this? Which one was that?
That was another 80 CRV, so yeah that one just absolutely tacoed on me.
Yeah, so when I make my thin chef's knives, and I go that thin, because I go, my spine is like 0.04, so it's thin, but I grind to that, and I usually do that after heat treat, so like I'll do like 60% of the flat grind and then, you know, get it kind of thin, like a 16th of an inch at the edge. And then I'll just finish the grind. A lot of those thin knives that I've done, they would totally fail if I had to heat treat them at that thickness. And even with a kiln, I think I would get tons of warping. Yeah. Although I will say, I think if it was an air cooled steel, like you could do it maybe with A2, probably definitely do it with AEBL because you plate quench that. Mm-hmm. I still think though you'd run into warping problems, but the benefit to starting with that thin of stock is you really just profile it and put an edge on it, you know, flat grind it up once. I mean, yeah.
With all of my knives, I heat treat at full thickness to try to mitigate all of that warping problems. But even, I mean, 0.03, I had no chance of making that, you know, come out straight.
Well, it was a fun experiment.
Can you heat treat, and this is me being ignorant, but can you heat treat something thick and then thin it down to size? Yes.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely. And that's what a lot of people do. And that's what I do for most of my knives. But if you heat treat like a really thick blade, you're sitting at the grinder for hours trying to hog off all that hardened material.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why, Ben, when you've seen some of my videos, I have that water misting system, and it's because you don't want the steel to get to a specific or higher than a specific temperature because you ruin your temper. So like once you get above 300 or 350 degrees, depending on where your temper point is, you now ruined your edge retention. So you really want to watch that. That's why the misting system that we sell at housebay.us is very important because you can
get there just by grinding, right?
Exactly.
I can second that. I can second that. I actually picked one up and it is absolutely fantastic. I mean, that's what I was on all day this morning. So, I mean, it's a great system. It's totally worth the couple bucks you throw at it.
Yeah, it's a game changer because I still dunk. You know, I'm still like dunking every once in a while if I feel my hands get, but it's never anywhere near as the amount of dunking that I had to do before. So, and I always kind of thought like when I was, especially with like sharpening, I always felt like, oh, I'm really fucking this edge up because it's just too, you know, it's real thin at the edge. And with the misting system, I never even worry about it. I don't even burn my tips anymore. I used to burn my tips all the time, and
with my VFD, I turned it down between 60% and 70% percent, and also had my misting system, so I didn't dunk once all day today.
No kidding. All right, that's a good. Yeah, I go full bore, man. I turn it up to 11. I always use a really, really low grit belt because I want to hog off as much material as possible. A lot of people don't realize this, when you're using a very high grit, you think, "Oh, I'm going to use a high grit belt and it's going to create less friction." Actually, it's the opposite. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going to heat your steel up much quicker using a higher grit belt. So, that you makes know, sense. Quick and dirty. That's my style. Yeah. Yeah.
Man, all this burning tits and dunking and quick and dirty.
I said tips.
This knife making's cool. Tips.
You got to get into it, Ben.
I guess.
I mean, he's got the second half coming up.
Oh,
it's true.
What's that?
You've got the second half coming up. You've got that handle to still work on.
It's on my list of updates to give you guys.
That's cool.
Man, it feels like my shop's been just insanely busy. I keep trying to make a list, you know, and my problem, maybe you guys have this too, but I'll have a list of shit that I need to get done, right? Like a list of projects in the shop. But maybe I'll come out and the shop needs a quick cleanup before I start. That's kind of my routine. Almost every single day, every single session, I guess you'd call it, I start by doing a cleanup. This seems, I don't know, it's just the way it works. Come out, clean a few things up, and somehow that dives me down rabbit holes, right? And then all of a sudden there's five new things on the list. I have been, well, with a small shop, I've been desperately trying to organize, and I've not been thrilled with my setup, with my layout of my tools and how accessible things are. And I have a dream, and I think it's only really feasible in a larger shop, but my dream is that every tool that I need is ready to go when I need it, right? And in a small shop, it's just not possible, because if you had them all set up, you wouldn't have room to walk through this place, right? So, like, my planer sits down on the floor, and I got to pick it up and plug it in and set it up if I want to plane wood. My jointer, you know, has been sitting out in the middle of the shop because I just didn't have a great place to put it. My CNC, when I got it, it was such a crazy shit show trying to get that thing off of the pallet that I ended up building the cart for it about 6 inches too tall. So it was kind of up at chest height. So I've been tackling massive shop organization projects, and I finally am starting to be happy with how the setup is now. I ended up sliding my joiner. I cleaned out underneath. I have workbenches all.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Along one wall, it sticks out about 3 foot from the wall, and it's sort of just a little bit of a work surface over there. And so
With your organization here, are you like inspired by Adam Savage's, you know, first order retrieval type situation?
100%. 100%. I am not a fan of drawers. In fact, it's probably about 6 months ago now that I built my first drawers in my shop. And basically, in those drawers, I put things that I very, very rarely needed to get to. So I have three drawers that are full of like scrap leather and just leather work stuff that I don't use very much. Then I have several other drawers that are sort of hand power tools that I don't use very often. Like I've got a handheld planer. I've got the restore tool that's a wire wheel type tool. I've got all those in drawers. But other than that, I've got a grand total of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I've got 10 drawers in my workshop. That's it. Everything else is hanging on the wall, out in the open, on a shelf, you know, very easy to get to. You can see it and grab it and go. So that's maybe the other part of my shop organization that makes it hard to get a really good layout, right? Because I need all that wall space to hold tools, basically. But I cleared out underneath those workbenches, and now I can slide my jointer right under those workbenches. The jointer, it gets a fair amount of use in my shop. It's like the first step in every woodworking project is to joint and plane the boards. But then it's done, right?
Damn hippies with their joints.
Jointing shit. So I got that tucked away. I'm going to put my router table in my workbench. I recently put a new top on my workbench. We had a temporary top that I made for our kitchen island before I made the official butcher block. And that was just out of some reclaimed ponderosa pine that we pulled out of our attic a couple of years ago when we did a remodel.
Let me ask you something, Ben. You know, one of the things I really like about your shop is sort of the feng shui, if you will. The theory of feng shui, kind of like where you don't have anything blocking something off. I mean, obviously, because you have to tuck things under, you obviously, you know, you have to pull things out or whatever. But at the same time, your shop has a really interesting sort of energy about it. And you can tell it's worked in, it's lived in. You spend a lot of time there. You know, it's obvious when you see pictures and videos of your shop. And there's a lot of shops out there that have this exact same scenario going on where they're, you know, they're worked in and lived in, but they're just, it looks like somebody just picked up a tool, used it, dropped it on the floor. You know, it's not, there's not a ton of organization. How much of that, when you think about all the things that you're doing, you obviously put in a little bit of interior decorating into your, you know, I use that term loosely, but you know, you know what I mean? Like, you think about that, right?
I spend a lot of time doing that, to be honest. And I probably spend too much time doing that. And those are the rabbit trails I end up going down, right?
Because you want it to look cool, right?
I do. Mean, that's the thing. I want it to be functional. I want it to look nice. But I also, I want to feel creative when I walk in here.
I love
that.
Yep, I'm with you.
For me, the things that spark my creativity are objects that I see, right? And so, I can't remember what show I was listening to the other night, what podcast, but they were remarking, about how some people can just look at an object and immediately have 10 uses for it, you know, or have a problem and think about some found object that they have. Like Laura Kampf is really good at this. If you've ever seen her videos, she takes found objects and turns them into something just amazingly useful and cool.
Yeah, I love her channel.
I have that same kind of inspiration, I think, you know, where when I see objects or if I have a problem in front of me, being able to sort of look around and see all the tools and pieces and parts and be like, oh, I could do this with that. You know, I can quickly see three or four steps ahead in the chess match, so to speak.
Sure.
And yeah. So I spend a lot of time on what I'd call like shop management, you know, and this is going to sound total first world, but that is part of a challenge when tool companies send me tools to try and make comments about, is it becomes a lot of work, right? Just managing all the stuff that comes in can be a lot of work, right? It's like, oh, here I am bitching, you know, complaining about getting free tools.
But, I know. I wish I had a sound effect machine. I'd play like a violin right now. I'd be like, I have nowhere to put my new bandsaw. Yeah.
And I'm not.
Where
I certainly
will I tuck
am
it
not,
into my workshop?
I'm not complaining about it, but I will admit that it takes time.
Yeah,
and I think,
yeah, of course.
I don't often realize, I think, how much time I spend on that. My wife's really good at reminding me. So,
but half of that's the fun of it.
I personally
think that there's, you know, you're actually working through sort of a manufacturing mindset.
Yes.
When you start doing any one thing, and especially knife makers, because we're repeating processes a lot, you know, running
over
batches of
over
knives
over and over again,
over and over. What can I do to make this better?
That.
You know, that's that's what I keep asking myself. It's like, what can I do to make this faster? Is there a tool that can remove some of the manual labor? And if there is the return on investment of that tool worth investing in?
Yeah.
And you know, all those things. And it was funny
just
because
a quick hint. Just a quick hint, it is always worth it. There is almost never a situation where it's not worth making your life easier.
I would say that too. That's as much time as I spend organizing and thinking through, well, should I hang that shelf there or an inch lower? You know, sometimes that one inch makes all the fucking difference in the world. You know, like my ShopBot, for example, I mentioned that by the time I built the cart, the wheels that I had that I felt like could support it were 6-inch tall casters. So, of course, well, what do? You throw them on there. That'll work. I'll make it work. But the fact that that thing sat at almost 42 or 45 inches off the ground, you know, like the actual bed of the CNC was up that high, it made it difficult to use. I won't lie. It was a pain in the ass. It was a mother trucker getting those fucking casters off of there. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
I spent the better part of a day getting those damn casters off of that thing because the cart with all of its contents plus the big, heavy, beefy ShopBot, I don't know, it probably weighs 500-600 pounds. So I had the old scissor jack out and... Oh, it was
it's like changing tires on a car.
I should have videoed it.
Yeah, you really should, because those are the challenges I think a lot of people don't realize that you go through as a maker to make your process work faster and you know, more efficient. And I'm doing that, you know, with my process right here with the I've got two things going on at all times in my workshop, and one is shipping. I'm doing a lot of shipping.
Man.
I ship every day now. I don't ship the big heavy stuff every day. I try to like split that up. But you know, when I invested all of this money in all of this steel, I started realizing like there's a whole bunch of people that probably have kits of the Revolution that they never got the tube steel. So, you know, I want to make sure they know that I have it. Well, I didn't advertise it more than, you know, 10 hours in, and I had already sold like 20 kits. Nice. And I was just like, okay, all right. Meanwhile, like, I don't have them broken up into kits. They're just stacked in by size right now in my shop.
Right.
This is 40 pounds of steel.
I know, and in a flat rate box. That's so
awesome.
In a
flat rate box. And to make this even, see, I don't feel so bad because Atlas Knife and Tool sent me an anvil in a flat rate box.
A fucking flat rate.
A 70 pound flat rate, 70 pounds of steel in a flat rate.
Hey, their little
box.
Anvils are nice.
Oh, they're freaking awesome. Yeah. You know what I use that little anvil for mostly now? I mean, I'll probably eventually make a stand for it and use it in knife making, but I use it a lot for like leather working, like when I need to like punch a hole or I need to like. It's great. It's amazing.
I had a shitty Harbor Freight anvil, you know, that little blue
one. That's what I use primarily.
Hey, that's what I'm on right now. I'm looking at doing an upgrade on my anvil because that little Harbor Freight I've been pounding out knives on, and it's just like completely wallowing out the center. So tell me more about this anvil you've got.
Check out Make Everything Shop.
He's doing a thing on it right now.
He just posted a video on... It wasn't Atlas Knife and Tool, though. It was some Amazon.
No, it's the Amazon anvil, which is the one I have. So, yeah, I don't have the one from Harbor Freight, but the one that I bought, Brian, is from Amazon. They have this in two different versions. They have a 66-pound, and they have 135. So he bought the 135.
$310.
$310
that's
shipped.
That's not bad for it. Yeah.
Yeah, under $3 a pound. And I messaged him last night on Instagram, and I just said, it would be interesting for you to do a side-by-side comparison between that and the one that's underneath it, because he has, like, that big Wright anvil or whatever it is. Peter Wright anvil underneath it. So I was like, why don't you forge something out on the 135-pounder from Amazon, and then also do the exact same project on your legit anvil, and let's see if they're the same, because that'll push people into it. I'm guessing that it will be the same result. That's what I'm guessing, but you never know. I'm sure there's a difference.
That anvil, that Amazon anvil, I think came into the community through Maker's Camp last year. And I don't remember the guy's name, but it was the guy that brought all the equipment for like Fader and those guys to do demos on. And that's where Zep sort of got introduced to this Amazon anvil. Because that guy had a half a dozen of them or something, and he's like, hey, you know, $300, you can't go freaking wrong.
I think they come out of China or India or somewhere, but I love mine. I painted mine black because I don't like the blue color they come in, so I just painted mine black.
The exact same thing with my Harbor Freight. I did a video on basically modifying it, kind of rounding over the nose and all that type of stuff.
Oh, I saw that video, Brian. That's a good video. Yeah, I like that.
Well, Chris Zeppieri is Make Everything Shop, but the reason he posts these things, and this is maybe a tip for folks aspiring to be content creators, you can also, in the truest sense of the word influencer, you can become an influencer to a point. Zep makes a pretty good amount of money on affiliate marketing. And so when he makes these kinds of videos and recommends, hey, buy this anvil, and then you know, he's got the link. He speaks pretty openly about it on their podcast, the Handmade Podcast. But it's a good way if you've got a decent following and you've got products that you know, that you trust and that you believe in. It's a good way to sort of bolster your income to an extent if you can get enough people, people to a product.
That's the key, is that you have to, pardon me, I'm eating some beef jerky at the moment.
You're good. Jerk away.
Anyway, so that's the key, though, because here's the thing. If I recommend that anvil to somebody and it's a pile of shit.
Yeah.
That ruins my reputation. And same with Chris. He knows this. Yep. So he's always saying, like, look, everything I recommend, I test myself, which is the reason why he had that anvil sitting on his other anvil, because he bought it to use it. Mm-hmm. He'll run it through its paces, and then if it's junk, he'll tell you, because, you know, he doesn't want his reputation ruined, and neither do I. But, I do the same thing, man. I recommend... Every time somebody asks me about a tool or there's a post on the Facebook group or whatever, I always use an affiliate link. It doesn't cost the end user, the buyer, anything. And I get a little kickback. And I'll tell you, it's a nice little supplemental income. You know, it really is. And if you do it, when you combine it between Facebook, Instagram's hard because you can't really link anything. But yeah, if you do it between Facebook and YouTube, and also through like email and everything, if somebody asks me like, hey, what kind of wheels do you use, or what kind of this do you use, or whatever, I'll send them the affiliate links, as long as I understand whatever I'm sending them that I would buy myself, or I have purchased and I have used it, because my reputation is super important. I would never, ever risk my reputation over to make $5 or something. It makes no sense.
Yeah. And it's not easy. Well, it's so rare that someone asks me about a product, honestly, which is kind of interesting.
You need to be the guy though.
Well, and that's what's weird, because like I test so much stuff.
But see, okay, I already know why. I know the reason why, Ben. Because
why?
You test stuff, but it's always like in the background, kind of.
True.
Like you're not like doing marketer. Did you see the reel or the IGTV video that I did of the TR Maker knife vise? It was just like a minute and 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. That is, I did that because I make no money from those transactions, by the way. If you buy something from TR Maker, I don't see a dime of it. But I have a relationship with Ucell, and I believe in his product. So, you know, if he sends me something, I test it out. If I don't feel like that product stands, you know, the true test of the house-made industrial testing that I do, which is like real-world testing, because, a lot of times these companies will send me something, and the next day they'll go, well, you didn't make a video on it. And I'm like,
I won't. Not the next day.
I need to use it first. And then I want to, because I'm not going to recommend something to my audience. Just because you sent me a $50 device doesn't mean I'm going to push it to my audience or whatever. But the thing is the concepts here are to, for you anyway, is that you need to make sure that you say, I'm using the Rockler Square, and this is why. You need to be more of a salesman. You're more of a quiet salesman. You're like doing the soft sell. You shouldn't do the soft sell. If you truly believe in a piece of gear from Rockwell, fucking make an awesome video of you using it and how you use it, and tag the shit out of them and do it, and don't have any shame at all. Because there's some dude, when I do that, there's guys that come to me and go, thank you for making that video, because it's changed. Even though they bought something, there was a transaction, whatever, it still helped them. And they were like, dude, it's a game changer. You know, you helped me through this. Yeah. And I get that more often than not. You need to do that. Yeah. Sell yourself.
I got that with the TR Maker bevel jig. I saw you made a video on that TR Maker bevel jig, and then I hit up Yusel, and he had it to me in like 3 days.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just how that works.
I'll have to start doing that, because there legitimately are things that I use and things that I think would surprise people. You know, I don't have the best tool set when it comes to like top of the line woodworking tools. You know, there's Jason.
Doesn't matter.
Bent,
you know, you Jason buy all that stuff with Amazon. That,
though.
Well, and that's my. You I guess those that's middle... my point is that it's a good thing. I don't want the best tool set. I don't want
don't
to
need
be
it.
Like chock full of Festool shit in here, because.
Uh-oh, somebody's air compressor going off. Uh-oh.
Alexa, turn off the air. Thank you.
Oh, my God, that's so funny. Mine went off last week, and here's what's really funny is mine went off last week, and it's in my grind room, so it's a little bit muted, but I was like, oh, shit. So I'm like, I didn't even mute myself. I ran over there and turned it off. When I processed the audio for the podcast, somehow, and I don't know how, it got, like, you can't hear it at all. Like, you can't even hear the damn thing.
I don't even know that I heard it when we were on the pod, to be honest.
There must be some sort of suppression system that goes through our podcasting software that we use. But anyway, let me give you a real quick.
Let's hear your shop.
Yeah, my shop experience for the week is pretty much just catching up on orders. It's totally boring. I had to wrap up the Gyoto challenge. I did that, got the video out before I went to Blade. And then here's what's interesting. I was on an airplane when the video went live, so I didn't, and I had Wi-Fi on the plane, so I could respond to comments and shit like that. But it was like I didn't have a ton of time to respond to people because I was like, I got off an airplane, got my rental car, and literally drove to Cobb, had lunch, and walked in and was like hanging out with everybody immediately.
You were posting like right away when you guys got there.
Because my plan was to do all the social media, but then it got, you know, derailed by slammed. You know, actual social face to face conversation. Yeah. So I did that, and then I've got trucks of steel coming in. So now I'm doing the steel process and I'm selling tube steel. So if you've bought the Revolution laser cut parts or the Ultimate Bundle, now the Ultimate Bundle comes with everything you need to build it except for the wheels, motor, and VFD. So you just have to source those other three things. And at some point, I might as well even just throw this out there. I am looking for a machine shop that's willing to start small with me on aluminum wheel sets with bearings. So if anybody out there knows of a machine shop that'd be willing to work with me. The problem is that every machine shop I go to, they're like, sure, you know, but you'd have to buy 10,000 of each. And I can't just do that yet. So I need, you know, a machine shop to say, sure, let's make 1,000 sets. And then, you know, we'll, you know, go from there. But I haven't found, you know, most machine shops right now are super busy. So it's tough to get into.
So here's my question. A machine lathe.
Go ahead.
So here's my question. I know TR Maker, I know we're keep pulling up his name, Usel, but I know he sells those aluminum wheels. So have you ever talked to him trying to get some sort of a shipment situation set up?
Yeah, I think with that many wheels, the cost to get them here would be really restrictive.
Tough, yeah.
Yeah, because I need a lot of wheels. But you're right. Maybe I should explore that. I should go to him and say, like, hey, if I buy, you know, this many, I really just want to be able to offer my own wheels to the end user, you know, so they don't have to source it everywhere else.
I'll be spending some time in PA this summer, and the town St. Mary's that I grew up in, there's a pretty high concentration of machine shops and fab shops and sort of all catering to the powdered metal industry.
Okay.
That used to be really big back there, and now has started to diminish, you know, just with everything moving overseas and everything else. And so I could definitely ask around if there's some machine shops up there. My father-in-law is pretty connected in all of that stuff.
That's what we need. We need somebody like your father-in-law to be like a liaison where he would go, or just even a resource to say like,
right.
Oh, you know who you should talk to is, you know, this shop because they have a CNC lathe. I mean, we've already even got the drawings already drawn up. You know, we've got the CAD work is done. You know, the bearings, we can work that out, press the bearings in, whatever. You know, the thing about starting a small industrial tooling company is that you know, just like any other business, you have to kind of like figure it out as you go. There's like no one that's going to go, oh, hey, here's, starting a tooling company 101, you know, book from the library. You can't check it out. You really just have to kind of go with it and figure it out.
And those machine shop type connections, they're not easy to make, frankly.
They're really not. They're standoffish people. They're a big standoffish bunch. I mean, pretty much every shop that I've talked to, unless you're spending, you know, 10 grand a month, they're not interested. You know, in your stuff.
Because traditionally, you know, to tool up for something like that is a pretty good sized effort. You know, I think about like my father-in-law's plant, they're a powdered metal plant. And so they have huge industrial presses, right? You make a mold or a die, they call it. And then they might literally crank out 5 million pieces, you know?
Sure.
In fact, he had on, I think, every one of his presses, and I don't remember how many presses they had, but it was 20 or more of these big-ass presses. They, about 5 years ago, outfitted them all with robotic arms. And the reason for it is because, you know, he says, frankly, I cannot get people to work.
Yep.
He's like, I can't. Big problem right now. He's like, I could grow probably twice as big if I could get people to piss in a cup,
yeah,
you know, pass a drug test, and then actually come to work every day.
My steel distributor is having the same issue. They were like telling me how with all the, you know, the stimulus stuff going on and, you know, the COVID and everything. So they're having like trouble employing people. But also the other part of this is people are getting smart now. They're like, why would I work in a steel mill when I can go work in an office and probably make more money and not like expose myself to harsh conditions? Yeah. Getting back to, you know, when I was standing in that room with Ernest Emerson, he's a guy that started a small knife company, turned into a large knife company. He's got like an amazing resume. If you read about this guy, he's like, he does SEAL Team 6 training and jiu-jitsu. He's an older gentleman now. He's in his 60s, but he's still very active and doing all these things. And he was talking about the journey to becoming the uncommon man. And when the uncommon man is basically separating yourself from the herd, the reason why I think I like his rhetoric so much is because he kept repeating the phrase, you have to work for it. And it blew his mind when I walked up to him at the end of his talk and I gave him a couple of work for it stickers. And I was like, dude, man, you should come on my podcast.
Speaking to your heart, man.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he looked right at me. And he was like, oh, yeah, okay. You know, we were kind of chatting back and forth. And I said, the problem with a majority of people is they think that success is like, you know, these gold chains and these diamond rings and the money and all that that comes along with it. But
yeah,
it's often very much disguised as really hard work. And it is. Yeah. And that's the key here. A lot of work and a lot of risk. And he's obviously somebody that's done it and lived through it and whatever else and wants to preach about the benefits of, you know, working your fingers to the bone to climb up and do something with your life or your time on earth, which is totally 100% my rhetoric. Like, I'm just like, hey, you want something, you got to work for it. Let's do it together. Let's collab. Let's figure it out. So anyway, getting back to what you're saying, it's hard to get people to do these kinds of things. And it so is. Machines will build these, by the way. If you have if you have a CNC lathe, you can turn these wheels, you know, one after another. There's nothing complicated about them.
I wonder if we could cut them out on the shop bot.
You probably could, but it would take so long. You know, these CNC lathes, they'll cut, you know, apart every 30 seconds to a minute. So, you know, the amount that I would need on a regular basis would be, you know,
a lot.
So,
does anybody make them out of aluminum's an obvious choice because of the, you know, it doesn't heat up and all that stuff, keeps its dimension and all that. But does anybody make them out of like a Delorin or some kind of plastic or something like that?
Yeah, there's nylon wheels out there and plastic.
Yes.
But they just don't hold up.
Yeah, right. They deform, and every time if you make the stupid decision to grind on that Delrin plastic or whatever plastic it is, you put that groove of where that heat was where your knife touched. So,
okay, makes sense. Yeah.
Sounds like you're speaking from experience,
Brian. From my 1x30 days, yep.
The 1x30 days. Yep.
Also, speaking of grinding and sanding and the like, I saw recently that our man Vandersander has a new version out there.
Yeah, he collabed with Richard Beck. Yeah,
very cool.
Really kind of a cool evolution of his Vandersander, which makes it, in my opinion, makes it a much more usable tool.
Yeah.
It does all the same stuff. It's just super now compact. It's a benchtop. It's a benchtop system now. So
It looked like it was way more compact than what it was before.
Yeah, and the incorporation of a work rest as well, which I think is
big addition. Kind of that's huge.
You gotta almost have to have that. And I think I've got a note queued up to send to him actually, and was gonna say, okay, now version 3, what else can it do, right? Because traditionally you see like Harbor Freight has one, every tool company out there has a belt and disc sander combo, right? So, you know, you've got that big powerful motor there, it's just spinning a little shit and disc, make it do something else as well, you know.
Really looking at picking one up specifically because when I upgraded from my VFD, I now have that motor just sitting there on a shelf ready to be used. So I don't know if that would be good, like having a one speed, motor on
I think it depends on what you're gonna grind, right? Like I know with wood, like I've got a 3/4 horse, an old ass motor here that I pulled off of a jointer, and it spins at like 3,400 RPMs, which is too fast for wood. You know, it'll just burn wood. But I could add a pulley or, you know, add a wheel to it and cut that speed in half, no problem. So that's an option that you could employ is, you know, just add a pulley, so to speak, or a wheel, so, you know, that would reduce it, you know, or increase it, either or. You could
I think that single phase motor makes an excellent boat anchor or doorstop, in my opinion. And you could very inexpensively move away from that to a 3-phase motor and get a lot more functionality and flexibility. You know, this is an argument people love to have with me on YouTube, and I just simply state in my videos now, I will not have this argument with you anymore. Like, this does not happen because there's so many people out there that have worked in the industry, or they say they have, and they're like, you can most definitely speed control a single thing. Yes, I'm not saying you can't. I'm not saying you can't. But you know what? It's not efficient, and it burns up motors and it burns up controllers, and I've done it. And who in this day and age wants to move a goddamn pulley system belt anymore? Considering doing my mill, taking that single phase motor off of there and throwing like a 3-phase. And I mean, think about how much more efficient, like think about how much more utility I'll be able to get out of that mill.
Oh Lord.
If I have a variable speed control on how fast that end mill spins.
Why do you think tool companies haven't caught on to that?
It's expensive. I mean, that's the thing. Single phase motor, simple. I mean, it's just a simple device, and it's an on off switch. Whereas with 3-phase and a single phase to 3-phase conversion VFD, you've now just increased the cost, like probably by the powertrain by double, I would imagine, something like that. So
if you guys will allow me to plug another podcast real quick, just to explain how much those pulley systems to switch the speed suck, Jason over at the Hustle and Grind podcast picked up a belt grinder with one of those pulley systems. Had it for a couple weeks, maybe, and has already decided to move up to the VFD.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah.
I saw him at Blade, by the way. And I was on his podcast like right before. So I joined their podcast, and then, I ran into him at Blade. He gave me some awesome Osage Orange. He actually brought it with him so he could hand it to me at the show. And then, but you're right. He was telling me that he got the KMG Classic, which is an excellent grinder. Mm-hmm. If you're going to buy any grinder, you know, go with one of these companies that's been around a long time. KMG, Housemaid, of course. You know, don't want to build it yourself, kind of thing. You want it just delivered. As of right now, you can't really do that with a Housemaid product, but you can do it with Broadbeck and you can do it with KMG. Mm-hmm. He was telling me he got a great deal on it because he got a single phase motor. I did not have the balls to tell him on the podcast, like, you're going to fucking hate that. I'm glad he figured it out
almost immediately.
I was just like, it'll get you there. It'll get you started. You know,
have you ever thought about selling assembled kits?
I have, and we're actually looking at that right now. Like I said, there's no like roadmap for this stuff, but our market space is really marketing to people who can't afford the pre-built grinders, and they have to work for it and build their own, which ultimately translates into dollar savings for them. Yeah. So, you know, that's where our market niche is. Here's what I've discovered, and I'm not bashing anybody in particular, but I got a chance to see a lot of grinders this weekend.
I bet.
And the Revolution is up there with a lot of these ones that have been built for years. And in fact, I'm just going to come out and say it. way more functionality than some of these designs that haven't been modified in 10, 15
years.
You've
iterated, man. Yeah. Like I've said a dozen or more times, you treat your grinder project like an open source software project, and you're constantly improving it from your own brain and the collective brain of the community. And,
all the time.
And that That's alone, right? I mean, you complain about a grinder that you bought from XYZ tool company, and your complaint is in the echo chamber. You know, it's
right.
It goes absolutely fucking nowhere. But you complain about a Revolution grinder, and in the next version, it's fixed. You know, or you get a tracking device with it now, or you get this with it, that with it now, or you know, it's always improved.
People have ownership over this project.
Yeah.
And it also empowers them to learn new things. And then at the end, you have this like big, heavy industrial machine that you can build stuff and make money with. So, yeah, that and man, walking around. In fact, I won't mention any names, but talking with someone who has a grinder from a larger, older grinder company that's been around for a long time. And he was just like, you know what? I walked over to their booth and I gave them, I gave them a list of the things they need to update. Because they were just this tool is not functional. It's not flexible enough to be in a certain way. I heard this from multiple makers while I was there,
and
it wasn't just over that one grinder company. And again, I would never bash another company because why? I mean, it makes no sense. But what I'm saying is if you intend to be fat and lazy in this industry, you will get overtaken by someone else. And just like any other business, if you sit idle for too long and you don't change much, you're gonna run into a David and Goliath situation at some point, and you never know who that David is gonna be. So
it's
you
gonna
should
be.
Yeah. And so I was empowered. You know, I was walking around and I was getting the stink eye from people. Like, they knew who I was. They're like, why are you in my booth? I'm sniffing around your engineering, my friend. I'd love to see it firsthand. But what it did was it gave me an indicator that I was doing all the right stuff. And that I think that we're moving into the proper, you know, getting to where I think we're going to have, like, Housemade Industrial is going to be a legitimate tooling company. And
love
I just... It's where I'm headed. So
it's great,
awesome.
Man. It's so neat to it's a really unique industry, I think, in a lot of ways. But your approach to it is so unique in that space that I would love to see it catch on. Right? I mean, if you look at the sort of tooling industry. They're dinosaurs, right? Like the companies that are in the space, whether it's woodworking tools or metalworking tools or whatever it is, they've been in that space since God was a boy. You know, like there have not been a whole lot of new players. There has not been a whole lot of new competition. Hell, they're still mass producing using some of the same exact castings and molds that they used 20, 30 years ago. You know,
the hand tool market's
innovated, but the big machinery hasn't fucking changed in forever, you know?
Well, I think what the thing is once you get up as a big company, you get bigger and bigger, and all of a sudden there's nothing to do but rest on your laurels.
Yeah.
And your laurels is quicksand. The longer you rest on them, the further back you fall and the further down you sink. And there's always 1,000 little guys like Brian House and a bunch of different people like that, that are right there to pick up that slack and be right there at the top.
Yeah. I can't wait to see 5 years from now, how many things are born out of COVID, right? Folks starting things or, you know, to some extent, Brian, your efforts with Housemade, you know, this was arguably a pretty good growing year in some ways. Right. And coming out of it, you start ramping up hardcore, and I think there's going to be some changes in the next 5 years, some pretty good sized changes. Which will be really
I think
cool.
we're already seeing the changes take place, and I think a lot of it's positive. You know, it sucked to go through it. Hey, we went through it, right, everyone? I feel like, you know, we should all be wearing, you know. I went through the pandemic t-shirt and all I got was this t-shirt, you know, whatever.
See, right. I've never known anything but this because I sold my first knife as B-Cone Knives November 2019.
Interesting. Oh, wow. Okay.
So, I have only been in the COVID era.
Yeah. Well, this is baptism by fire, my friend.
That's what I've been hearing.
I opened my first company in 2006, and then in 2007 and 8, we had the worst financial economic depression this country's seen since the 30s. And I figured if I can go through that, I can go through anything, and I did. And now that gave me the cojones, you know, to do a bunch of other cool stuff. So, you know, think of it in terms of like, you know, you got a nice slap in the throat, and that's cool. But this, you know, hopefully moving forward, things get easier, you know, and that's the key. Always keep working towards the goal, but then look back at where you started and then think, man, I've come a long way, because you really have.
And the other big key is once things start getting easier, don't let off the gas.
You got that right. The minute you do, the minute you slow down and stop, somebody will overtake you. Have you guys ever seen the subreddit Premature Celebration?
Yes. You know what
I'm talking about? my favorite is the Tour de France, right? They're bicyclists, you know, they're doing their thing, and then that bicyclist, he's racing up to the finish line. He takes his hands off of the handlebars to get the photo, right, of him with his hands up as he's crossing the finish line. Meanwhile, what he doesn't know is that someone is right behind him. And as he lets off the pedals and lets his hands off the handlebar to get that photo, the other guy comes right around him and slams him and beats him by a millisecond. And that's it happens in ice skating, like speed skating. It happens in marathon running and everything else. Don't be the guy who prematurely celebrates. True. Keep your head small and shrink it down and put your ego in your pocket and work hard every day. And on that note... I'm going to call that a show, fellas. This was excellent time. Brian Cohn joined in the Work For It crew.
Hey, man, it's great. I love being here.
What did you get? I want to know from the audience what you thought about today's show. So if you would, please send us a DM at workforit.podcast on Instagram. You can reach me through my website, housemaid.us. There's a contact form right there. You can shoot me a message directly. Or if you know me on Facebook and you find me there, you can do that too. I would love to have your feedback. And hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we'll be back live right here on the Work For It podcast. Gentlemen, it was an absolute pleasure to hang out with you in my workshop. I know you guys are going to keep working for it this week. Absolutely. Work hard.
Every day. Let us know about let us know if you would be interested in a Work For It podcast build along / challenge. I'd be curious on that too.
I think that needs to happen one way or the other. That just sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, but let's build some excitement. Let us
absolutely
know, if you're into it.
I'm into it. All right, fellas. We'll catch you on the flip side, all right?
Absolutely.
Adios. See you later. Goodbye.
Thanks again, guys.
Fuck out
of here. See you later.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.